Welcome back to Relatively Football. I'm a brother. My name is Theo Lloyd Hughes, and I'm here with my sister, Flo. What's up, Flo? Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Big Monday. Busy Monday.
I know you've got a lot going on. I appreciate you divvying out some of your microphone time on while you're spread so thin.
My USB time. I'll be charging you back for the electricity bills.
Please pay. Yeah, please invoice me for the electricity bills. You were once again in the ground, around the grounds on Sunday. What an honour.
It was an honour. And do you know what? I have to really say, shout out to the Reading staff at the Majeski. Really nice team there, like stewards, everything. But not only that, I just thought the way that they organise everything, having been to quite a few grounds now since we restarted after lockdown, and I know you've been obviously to Houston, just the way they had everything organised and the temperature checks, they had this like funky smartphone that did the temperature for you. It wasn't one of those gun things. And they did a survey monkey. Yeah, they had a survey monkey, whereas at Chelsea, they make you fill out a actual piece of paper, so just do it all online. It was just really good. So yeah,
grade out of 10 relatively logistics, grade out of 10 on Reading.
I'm gonna say 8. Ooh. Only because the normal turn off of the M4 to get to the Majeski was blocked, so you had to go back round the roundabout again and then go in. So for that reason, I'm gonna give them -2, and there's no food, which obviously isn't their fault, but you know, I love a bit of snacks, but you know,
you can't win them all.
But there probably wouldn't, to be honest, there wouldn't be food anyway in WSL. It's very rare. So, but anyway, great trip.
Shout out Houston Dash for the chicken sandwich. Reading 1, Man City 1. It did finish, and you were there calling the game. Probably one of the most, I think it was a weekend. I don't want to upset Craig Hadley, so I wouldn't say a weekend of upsets, but a weekend of surprises in the WSL. But this one may be bigger than any other. I think you and I both saw a City win coming in, and Reading held on for the point. What was your take on the game? City wasting too many chances?
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with you on that weekend of surprises tagline, and that's the narrative. I feel a bit sorry for Reading because it was a great performance from them, but City missing so many chances will overshadow Reading's great performance. They dug deep. They had a bit of a game plan, which was, you know, press high in the first half if you can do it, try and nick a goal, which they did very early, and then hold on to that lead. And they did it, sort of. They got themselves a point. And there was a time when I thought Reading were going to hold out for the whole game, but Sam Mewis, great goal. And I did feel sorry for City because they really wanted to win that game, and there was real visible frustration on the pitch afterwards. Lots of post-match discussions. Gemma Bonner and Lucy Bronze still out in the middle about 40 minutes after the final whistle.
I actually heard a report they're still there right now. Still talking about the game. They're yet to go back to Manchester.
You know what's funny is that the England drivers... So when you go to England camp, St. George's Park, which is in a very random place, but Burton-upon-Trent, so it's like Midlands, sort of nearish Stoke, you get picked up by a car, very nice, like black Mercedes, that takes you all the way from where you are to St. George's Park. It's really nice. Even staff get it as well. So, and they used to share rides, I think, but because of COVID, if players are, you know, at the same club, I don't think they're sharing rides. So when you came out the Majeski, there were like 8 elite Mercs with blacked out windows waiting for all the City players who are going to go to camp. But obviously I saw Ellie Robart getting into her car, but like Bronze was still in her kit on the pitch and everyone else was getting into their cars. So her driver must have been waiting an extra like half an hour. She would have got there so late. But yeah, she was not happy.
No Mercedes for Gemma Bonner. Hashtag free Bonner, but we'll save that for
another.
Don't
remind me.
We'll save that for another podcast. Do you think Bonner would have... Do you think if Bonner was on the pitch, that corner goes in for Reading?
You know what? It's a real talking point for the game, I think. And I was surprised when Gareth Taylor said afterwards, and maybe you all remember this, but it's really hard with the Conti Cup games because you can't find the lineups very easily. But he said that Alex Greenwood had played as at centre-back for City before this season. But in the Conti Cup, I don't think she did.
I thought it was Greenwood at left back and Esme Morgan at right back in the Conti Cup.
Yeah. So anyway, we asked Gareth Taylor afterwards. He said, well, actually, she's played there for City before, so we knew she could do it. The second half, it was fine, but that was only because Reading were tired and was sitting back and just trying to hold on to the lead. So that's why it was okay. But in the first half, it was all over the place because they were constantly getting into each other's way, practically falling over each other. This is Stokes and Greenwood, two left backs. And I can understand that, you know, people dream of having a left-sided centre-back who's naturally gifted on their left foot. I get it.
Takes a good corner.
Yeah, takes a good corner. But that's the thing. You had Greenwood flying up the pitch to take corners and then Stokes being on the halfway. And it just made no sense to me. Stokes taking throw-ins and then cutting inside. It was just, I could, maybe it will work out, but I think it was quite key to go for it in that game. And I think Bonner would have provided them with a bit more solidity. Would they have not conceded that corner? I think they probably still would have because they were half asleep. They weren't ready. They weren't focused. And that's what happens.
Yeah, I thought Stanway is the one who's marking Eichlund at the near post. And I don't know if Bonner's on the pitch, if that changes. I did think Dan Carter and Bruton were doing a little bit of dark arts blocking off Roebuck for the corner, though.
You can't do the dark arts when you're playing the big team.
I think it's allowed, but I was watching it back a few times and I was like, oh, if I was Roebuck, I'd be really annoyed that she couldn't get anywhere near that ball, to be fair. I think that the thing which broke my heart, great goal by Sam Mewis, taking that space from the midfield. I thought Reading, Fishlock especially, dropped back and Reading just kept that deep line really tight, which meant that the only space City had was often at the edge of the box. And so I think that goal was what City needed to do. Someone, and it obviously was Mewis for one part, needed to take the game by the scruff of the neck, take the space on the edge of the box and get a finish off. But for me, the heartbreaking moment was Chloe Kelly missing that chance in the second half. It was one of the few times they managed to work the ball into the six-yard box. And 9 times out of 10, I think Kelly finishes that. And it was to see that skim wide. My heart broke for City.
And you know what? Jess Fishlock got away with one a little bit as well because I think there was a bit of a cheeky handball from her. And the referee didn't give it. Man City players were fuming, understandably. And Reading's dugout, which is always loud. They're just very, very loud, a coaching group. They were shouting as well, but I'm not really sure why, because it was pretty guilty. And Jess Fishlock had a very guilty look on her face as well and kind of like quietly walked to the goal to defend the corner. But yeah, I think City were unlucky and Gareth Taylor was really honest in his post-match and just said on another day they would have won. And I was actually maybe thinking today, do I regret not asking him, does this officially mean probably the title is off the cards? Because he was asked that question last week when they lost to Chelsea and wouldn't really be drawn on it. And I just thought, well, there's no point because I'll just say the same thing again. But you are feeling like draw against Reading, draw against Brighton, defeat against Chelsea. That's a lot of points dropped now that may be a step too far. I just feel like it would be such a shame with these such a talented group of players this season if they don't come away with a trophy. But they've got the cup final to look forward to. And we were asking him about how long he's got to prepare. And he said he'll have about 3 or 4 days with the players before the final with the international break. So,
and two games against Arsenal in the league. So hypothetically, you're always 6 points away from Arsenal if you win both those. Obviously, that's a big ask. Jesse JPH, they had a great tweet talking about dropping points, which is in the last two title wins, Chelsea and Arsenal. Chelsea's obviously coming with an asterisk due to COVID. Those teams dropped 7 points or fewer. So City have already essentially dropped the amount of points you can in a whole season and still win the title, going off that point. City are now 5 points behind Everton with the other surprise result of the weekend, drawing 2-2 at home at the lovely Walton Park with the dogs walking by. This was a really fantastic game. I watched the whole 90 of this on Sunday. And I think it was another great sign of how Brighton are a defensive team, but they do it a little bit differently. I think we've seen teams like Reading and Spurs and Birmingham really just drop so many players back and just try and hold out. But I thought Brighton was so good on the ball on Sunday. And I was really, really impressed with Lee Heung-min in particular, leading the line and just having to do so much work as a lone striker, but being so patient, being so strong on the ball. When Rhianna Jarrett came off in the second half, did the same thing, added so much energy. And I mean, I think we're going to talk a bit about some of the lucky aspects of Brighton in this game to get the 2-2 draw, but I really thought they were really good value and they had more chances than I think you'll see on the highlights, and they had more possession. Maybe not. Again, it's like, it was one of those games where if you look at the stats, you think Everton wasted chances and they did kiss the post in the second half. But I really thought Brighton were good value and they held the ball really well. And something that, like, I feel like Brighton do differently is they're very smart at positioning well, forcing the other team to turn the ball around. And Letizia and Gibbons on the wings made it really, really hard for Emsley and Sorensen and Rasso to try and win those wing duels. And I just was so impressed with Brighton all day. Obviously, another goal for Govan. She was fantastic. And they got lucky, Everton. I don't know if you saw, you caught up with this when you saw Christensen's deflected free kick. That really broke my heart for Megan Walsh.
Yeah, to be honest, I agree with you. Obviously, I only saw the highlights, so I think you get a much better perspective if you do watch the whole game. But I did feel like there was probably a bit of luck on both sides. But Brighton, again, proving why everyone's really, they're one of everyone's favourite teams, I think, this season. They're a bit of a surprise package, but people are really enjoying how much they've progressed over the past year and the performances they're putting in. And they never gave up, which I think is such a good characteristic to have.
Definitely, because if you're
going away to top of the league who are in such good form and you go down like that and you're trying to get back into the game, I think it's, I mean, massive credit to them for doing that and getting a point out of that game. When if that deflected free kick goes in, you'd probably think, oh, well, that's it then, you know, it's not our day today. But they fought back.
I couldn't agree more. I feel like when Brighton obviously go 1-0 up, and we've said this before, like, that, you know, if Spurs, who can't seem to score, if they get an opening goal, how does that change the complexion of their defence? Birmingham have already shown this year when they get the opening goal, they can really shut shop. But Brighton had that lead, lost that lead, were really unlucky, end up going 2-1 down and still showed resilience, still were fearless. And I think it's just the real complexion of that team beyond just their defensive organisation that impressed me so much, because I think we've kind of put them a little bit in one of these teams that, like, we trust Hope Powell, but do they have the quality? And I thought, yeah, Lee, Rihanna Jarrett, Denise O'Sullivan's been just incredible coming over from the NWSL. So good at closing down space and understands. And I mean, you saw Brighton's second goal. That's an amazing, one of the best team goals of the weekend. 5 pass moves, 6 players involved. Eileen Whelan finishes it off. But the way Jarrett holds up the ball from the throw in, and then it's all one touch passing. I mean, I think they deserve more credit for the quality Brighton were really playing with. Obviously, what happens in the second half, Kaylee Green gets booked for a second time, is not sent off by Lucy Oliver. Flo, where are we at with refereeing?
Not only that, I want to talk about the Fliss Gibbons handball, because I talked about that fishlock handball. And I get handballs are sometimes difficult to spot. And we know there's been changes to the handball rule as well on an international scale. So there's intricacies with the handball, but sometimes you've got to call it as you see it when it's hands in the air trying to block a shot that clearly, which I think the Jess Fishlock one was, which I don't think made it into the highlights, and the Fliss Gibbons one was. So I would be pretty pissed off if I were Everton with that one. And then you have this, which, at what point was it in the game, Theo, minutes-wise? Because that's what I wasn't sure about.
I think it was after it was already 2-2. It was about the 80th minute, I think, 81st minute. It was 2-2. Everton hit the post at 2-1. It was almost 3-1. And then Whelan scores, and then Kaylee Green gets booked again.
So Everton could about have potentially had, let's say 10 minutes to try and win the game with a man advantage. And obviously, you know, that would have been big for them. So yeah, it's pretty poor, to be honest, because that is the basics. Okay, fine, you might not spot a handball, but we've seen issues with handball in the league before. But that is basic. That is really basic stuff. And Lucy Oliver is a good referee. She's refereed in cup finals. So she's not, you know, a kid here who this is their first step up into refereeing professional football. That's not the case. So that is really poor, because hopefully, you know, she apologised and that's it, and she didn't try and sort of cover her. But I think it speaks more broadly to a conversation that's always sort of bubbling under the surface in women's football, which is about the standard of refereeing. And the FA did announce their new women and girls strategy for football today. You can have a look on their website and on Twitter. picked up a tweet from Molly Hudson at the Times, and she actually said that she's had a look through the whole thing and there's no mention about full-time refereeing. And the reason this issue comes up all the time is because the referees aren't full-time in the WSL. So I guess, you know, we're not going to get better standards of refereeing unless the referees can be full-time and can hone their craft, like footballers can hone their craft. The same with goalkeeping, all the criticism around goalkeeping can't get better if we don't give people the opportunity to get better. So, yeah, interesting what Molly picked up about the strategy, which runs until 2024. There isn't currently anything in there about allowing refs to spend less time trying to make money in their part-time, full-time jobs and support them to become better referees.
There was a penalty given at Meadow Park where Arsenal beat Spurs 6-1, and you weren't too happy about this one either, Flo.
Yeah, I thought Tim Stillman at Stillberto on Twitter, who does the Ask blog, Arsenal Women's Stuff and podcast, great writer, he put a tweet saying it was a pity decision from the referee. And I have to agree, to be honest. At that point, Arsenal were 5-0 up, I think, were they?
At least four. Yeah. I don't know if it, I think it was in the first half. So they were 4 or 5. But.
And I guess justice was done because Rhiannon Dean missed the penalty. So in that sense, it didn't really do too much harm. But I didn't see any contact at all. It seemed like a huge dive. I was really disappointed. And I agreed. I did think it was a bit of a pity referee, and it was a way to try and get, you know, maybe she felt like this is, you know, feel a bit sorry for them. And it was a way for them to get into the game. But I mean, it didn't really make a difference either way, but it was poor.
I don't necessarily think it's a reason to give the penalty, but I was watching the game and I felt very sorry for Spurs. We've talked a lot about how Arsenal...
I'll tell you what I was thinking. Alana Kennedy coming from Orlando Pride must be like, I did not leave the South Side for this. Why have I left Orlando, leaky goal Orlando, for this? And when I leave, Orlando start picking up points. And
I think it was Miedema's second... I think it was Miedema's second goal where Alana Kennedy just comes sliding in hockey style to try and like block the goal with, and she has massive limbs, to get any limb in front of the goal, and Miedema still manages to squeeze it in. And I felt like after every goal, the camera person at the Arsenal ground cut to a Spurs player who just had their head in their hands, always looking into middle distance. And I mean, talk about great direction on the broadcast, but also like, man, the narrative was so heartbreaking because it just felt like every goal, Ashley Neville, Alana Kennedy, Caris Harrott was just caught on camera, like looking like they had seen a ghost or something. Especially Miedema's first goal, which was Arsenal's second, you see Ashley Neville also just try and like slide and throw their body in front of it, you know, the goal if they can. And the camera just immediately cut to a close-up of Ashley Neville's face, kind of like staring into the grass. And this game, I think we've had a few Arsenal thrashings, and I feel like after a while, the game almost happens like it's played in slow-mo or it feels like a training match. So it's hard to read. I think I learned less about Arsenal this weekend. The only thing you can learn is that absolute quality, Katie McCabe as well, unbelievable free kick, the second Miedema goal as well. She does the really cute little pass free kick for Miedema as well. So they're incredibly in tune. They're incredible. So much quality across the team. Leah Valti as well, and Goots in the midfield, I think, have slotted in really well when earlier on in the season we were questioning kind of the strength of that central midfield for them. So loads to like about Arsenal, but I don't really judge Spurs too much on this. I think, you know, we've seen them put in good defensive performances or look like they can build. Obviously, Rhiannon Dean missing that penalty is just heartbreaking. I feel like I'm using that word a lot, but really tough to see another player out of form, can't score, and you miss that penalty. The only bright light, Spurs fans, is another Siri Vorm corner nodded in. Lots of love for my favourite left back in the league, Siri Vorm. Great left foot. She keeps doing it. Karen Hills said after the game, terrible first half. We had some home truths put out at the halftime, and it was much better in the second. A little bit more effort, a little bit more grit. But just about sums it up. It was 5-0 at halftime, and they sort of drew the second half 1-1. So you can maybe give Spurs a little bit of support for that. I just want to touch briefly on Miedema. Obviously, She was smiling at the weekend, the greatest to ever do it, at least in this league flow. Anything you want to add? Because we obviously have to mention her hat trick and her continued nonchalant brilliance.
Unreal player, unreal contributions, not just scoring goals, but what she contributes to the rest of the team and assists. And we talked about that fantastic cross in that she put in for Lottie Webben-Moy to score her first goal for Arsenal. So, yeah, amazing player. And the BBC have a great montage on their website of her best goals. So I'd say, you know, check it out and you can just see her brilliance. And hopefully it brings Arsenal some trophies this season. And that she spoke about that in her post-match. So I just hope they get some.
52 goals in 50 games. I don't think that will ever be beaten, in my opinion. I think that's that. I don't think that kind of goal scoring record you'll ever see in the WSL ever again, in my opinion. But we don't know that. The other big surprise of the weekend was, well, maybe not. I don't want to upset Craig again. Maybe not a huge surprise in the result, but I was surprised to see him score four goals. Bristol at home lost 4-0 to the in-form Birmingham City. What struck out to you about this one, Flo?
Fantastic performance from Birmingham. And I think it was a pretty complete performance. Obviously, I only watched the highlights, but from that, it seemed like they
controlled... clean sheet in a row.
Yeah, and back-to-back wins as well. And it's great to see the growth of this team, a team that were favourites, one of the favourites for relegation, that I had certainly not written off, but was very worried about the task at hand for Carla Ward. And boy, how quickly they've progressed. I mean, what a coach she is. They're now in seventh. And the conversations we had about, you know, it just being about limiting goal difference are completely different now. And I just really hope that the good times keep coming, because it's fantastic to see. I think the only worry is losing Abbey Grant to a really reckless challenge to get her second yellow right at the end. Unnecessary. And what will
she'd only important. Just come on as well. She only played 30 minutes.
She came later, on. I think.
Yeah, she only came I was on wondering, the second half, probably around, I think it was like, yeah, just after the hour she came on.
I was wondering, the first incident when she got her yellow card, was it the same Bristol City player that she went in hard on? Because I was wondering if there was
some leftover tension. The first one was Legazo. Legazo one was a little bit beefy. She kind of like grabbed Legazo by the arm.
Yeah, I saw she threw her to the ground a bit.
Threw her to the ground. Second one was on Daniels.
So that's the only thing, is it... Their success this season is so much about this core group, this fantastic core group.
Continuity. 16 players they've used this year, the lowest of any team in the league, along with Bristol.
Exactly. Well, there you go. The start to back it up. So it's really important that you don't do things like that, because that can really negatively impact the team. So that was really stupid. And hopefully she realises she made a mistake. And I can understand you see red and you just go a bit mad, but they need to keep this core group together. And we've spoken about Rachel Causey going back in January. She scored yesterday.
Masterclass as well. She almost set up one early on before the goal as well. She had a great ball. It wasn't finished. But yeah, I thought she did a little bit of everything. Scoring one. She had a big block as well. Bristol's best chance came right at the beginning of the game.
So hopefully they grab as many points as possible now, and the departure of Causey in the new year doesn't have too much of an impact, or they can persuade her to stay. I don't know. Who knows? But perhaps that's unlikely with the contract situation. But yeah, and that Claudia Walker screamer was
goal of the weekend.
Yeah, definitely goal of the weekend.
I can't believe she tried it, because unlike Rachel Daly's goal, which we'll get to, which I think was a cross, Claudia Walker knows exactly what she's doing there. It's actually quite Miedema-esque, because it's very sort of silent but deadly, the way she just kind of drops the shoulder and then scoops it and whips it in that corner. Amazing goal.
So I have three words and then we'll move on. Relegation battle who?
That's who? It. Sorry, who? Bristol. I got nothing really to say about Bristol. I just wanted to give a little bit of love to the spine of Birmingham City and, of course, Carla Ward. Molly Green, Claudia Walker, Christy Murray and Rachel Causey all the way through the middle of that team, doing absolute wonders. I think it's interesting looking at a team. I was looking at the XG of the league as well, and we touched on it a little bit last week, but Birmingham have a 3.3 XG for seven goals. And you compare that to someone like Reading, who have an XG of 6.3 and six goals. Bristol with an XG of 1.5 for one goal. So you can kind of see how Birmingham maybe being a little bit efficient, really getting it done, might be unsustainable, but really great to see. The big American names were on show in Dagenham as West Ham lost 4-2 at home to Manchester United. Tobin Heath and Kristen Press are off the mark. Absolutely fantastic goal from Tobin Heath.
Do you think they know where Dagenham is or what it is? That was my big question of the week.
That was the takeaway. There was a film called Made in Dagenham with the wonderful Sally Hawkins. So
I've seen it. Great film.
I assume they at least
aware. Hopefully they've watched it.
Yeah, they've watched Made in Dagenham. yeah, I always think it must be hard. I going back to Reading's logistics, I really appreciate them playing all the games in the Majeski because it must be annoying for some of these teams, especially if you're like an American, to be like, oh, we're playing West Ham at Dagenham Stadium. Like it always feels like a bit of a disconnect.
Of all the places that you want to go, Adams Park is a stunning football ground. It is in the middle of nowhere. The public transport isn't great, but the backdrop at Adams Park, Wickham Wanderers ground, where Reading previously played home games, is glorious. But apart from that, yeah, it is a bit of a random place. So, I think they
Shout
must
out
be
Wickham.
Like, oh, cool. Shout out Wickham. They must be like, oh, cool. Yeah, see you at, London Stadium. Oh, no, actually, we're going down Dagenham. Don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Yeah. But which, obviously, if they were fans, I understand that, like, smaller stadiums create better atmosphere. Like, Kings Meadow is a great example of that. But I can understand if also on the other side, if you're, coming in from the States. Great goal for Rachel Daly. She's off the mark in the lead. She had the quintessential Beth Mead goal, as it's known, lobbing Mary Earps, maybe by accident in the goal, but a wonderful finish altogether. Tough day for West Ham. For a while in this game, I was really worried we were going to be once again talking about how long is Matt Beard going to be at the club, how disorganized and inconsistent West Ham. But actually, they kind of came into the game. And I think if it wasn't for the quality of Man United's forwards, Russo, Heath, Toon, Zellum in particular, Leah Galton had a nice game at not at left back but at left mid now, I think it would have been, I think this game would have been closer if United hadn't finished so well. But you do worry a little bit about West Ham still, even in a game like this where they finish chances, which we've said they haven't been doing. Now with Birmingham picking up points, do you think we're starting to see, obviously, Bristol are kind of on their own with Aston Villa. Do you worry about West Ham coming into that bottom three with Villa and Bristol, or do you think they'll have enough?
I think they'll have enough. And I think Matt Beard's attitude and mentality could save them a little bit because he's still remarkably positive. His post-match yesterday was pretty positive. He did sort of think, we've got the right tools. It's going to work out. It's going to start clicking. And they have played some tough teams already this season, having played Arsenal and Man United, who have really, really strong attacking talent. So unfortunate to play them at the times that they are, especially United, where they're all guns blazing now. I think he'll be disappointed about some of the other games where they had opportunities and they should have won. The Reading game, the Spurs game. So I think that's where the real frustration will be. But I think they'll be all right. And I just think things are looking so bad for Villa and Bristol that I think they'll be the ones fighting it out, really.
The one thing that worries me is I feel like Matt Beard doesn't know his best 11 yet. And Rachel Daly was moved out to winger yesterday. And I was actually surprised that he kept her on the right wing. I would have put her on the left wing and let her help. Mas Pacheco wasn't playing, a player I love at left back. You had Vettelin. And I was kind of thought maybe you move Rachel Daly over and you let Daly mark up Tobin Heath a little bit more and maybe do more defensive work, especially at home against a better side like Man United. So I was surprised to see Matt Beard do that. Obviously, he wanted to give Martha Thomas a go at centre forward, but Martha Thomas, who's been out with an injury, comes into a game like this playing up front on her own and just had absolute scraps. And so I thought it was a really tough comeback game for Thomas. I thought her energy looked really good and she looked really fierce, but didn't have anything to work with. And I thought Daly could have been used more as a defensive aid for Heath, who once again, Tobin Heath just looks amazing. She was only outdone by Alessi Russo, who is coming on fast for Ellen White's starting position in the England squad. Looks like an absolutely complete forward.
What a signing. She's got a 2-year contract at Man United. And I think there's an offer, they can extend it for another year. Sorry, I lost my words there. But yeah, so they've picked up a real gem there. And I'm so excited to see how this team progresses. They're now in third place and it seems like they're not even reaching their peak yet. We're only starting to see the real flashes of what Press and Heath can do. And they've got to win one trophy at least this season. It's just, oh, it's so exciting. I'm just so happy that all these players are here and they're all playing really well and just proving us all kind of right, I guess, and proving so many women's football haters wrong about how a good women's football is right now.
Before we finish up the roundup section, I want to kind of put it to you. I talk to a lot of NWSL writers, a lot of American writers, and everyone right now is dealing with this faux narrative that the NWSL is finished and they've lost all their talent to Europe. Obviously, there's more to it. It's to do with COVID. And what you're seeing is this kind of like supercharged WSL on steroids. And you saw that this week. Russo scores two, obviously coming over from the NCAA, not quite the NWSL, but still, you know, still an American import to some extent. Rachel Daly, Mewis, Heath, Press, Causey, Van Egmond from Orlando Pride. You saw all these NWSL / NCAA imports coming over from America and lighting it up this weekend. Are you worried maybe 2021-22 that you might see this the opposite thing happen in the WSL when all these imports go back? Because I think the Americans are doubling down on the belief that they've lost a year basically of having this talent, but they see the future as being very bright. What do you think is going to happen when these players leave?
It's a great question, and I think it's an important one to ask about. Well, I think it reiterates the fact we've got to make the most of this year. We've got to make sure people can watch all the games. We need to be able to get fans to games at some point. It's still outrageous that fans can't go to football games in England. Right, there's point A out the way. Point B, yes, I don't think the US national team setup are going to be as forthcoming beyond this about their players playing abroad. This is a real one-off, I think, because of the pandemic. Jill Ellis and others in the past have not liked their players playing abroad so much. And when they have come over, it's been for very short periods, Crystal Dunn, Carly Lloyd, etc. So I think we'll see flashes of it, but we won't see a big income group like we have this time. But I'm hoping it'll also give them a taste for it. And hopefully they'll want to come back if they enjoy it. Maybe not so much Alana Kennedy if she's getting smashed every week. Point two. Point three, the English talent playing abroad in the NCAA is exceptional. We've seen players who, Lottie Webber-Moy being one of them as well.
Grace Fisk, who actually going back, I thought played well despite getting battered 4 goals. Had a decent game for West Ham.
So that's why I think that fills me a lot of hope, because they're coming over signing 2-year deals with clubs. And I think that's great. And I think we'll see more of that. So yes, in a sense that we're not going to see the likes of Alex Morgan coming back again, probably, but we are going to see new names, which is important for English football as well, coming across, having had an exceptional footballing education in the States and just tearing it up. And that's what I'm really excited for, because we've seen players go abroad in the past. Lucy Bronze went to UNC for a year, but we haven't quite seen it on this scale and then coming back and having success, which is what I really want to see. I want to see people be able to get that whole complete education, which is what the US provides.
Well, let's finish up there. We'll take a little break and then we'll come back with some other relatively football business. All right, we'll see you in a jet. We're back. All right, this is Relatively Football, and we're going to do a little run around of the FA Women's Championship that is getting incredibly spicy. They just keep putting extra seasoning on this league. Flo, what are we watching out for? Another good Sunday of football.
Another fantastic Sunday of Championship football. This title race is crazy.
Whoa.
You can find the highlights on the FA player, and yeah, it's just proving to be a really, really good and competitive season. A few highlights from the weekend. I've just kind of pushed it all together and looked at a few interesting results and how the table's looking. So Lewis got a really good point away at Sheffield United against one of the title favourites in Sheffield United, and that means Lewis keep fifth place.
4 clean sheets in a row.
Yeah, they're proving to be a very hard to beat side. Got a lot of draws, but they're putting themselves in and around the top four, which is really important for them. And
can I jump in? Maggie Murphy, the wonderful Maggie Murphy, had a good bit, she asked the Lewis fans to take a screenshot of the league table because she said it might not look like this at the end of the season.
Yeah, remember this moment. But it's that's the thing, and that's the thing with Birmingham as well. If you make yourself a really hard-to-beat side with Reading and what they did as well, pick up points that way. And that's what Lewis are doing, and it's a very open league this year. Yes, Liverpool got relegated and now have a fully professional team, as do Leicester, but it's still very open and up for grabs. So we've got Durham at the top. Durham London Bees 2-1. London Bees coming off the back of just losing their manager because she was commuting from Ireland and it was just very chaotic. But Durham, amazing form. Durham have not lost a league game since November 2019. Yeah, of course, Championship season was postponed or suspended in March, or when was it, about May in the end. So they didn't play a lot of league games in the 6 months we've had since, but they, in the sort of, I guess, maybe about eight-ish league games, they're unbeaten. So they're at the top of the table, 3 points clear of Sheffield United and Leicester. So Durham are looking very good, will be an amazing promotion if they can pull this off early on. And then it'll be interesting though, because to be in the WSL, you have to have a full-time professional team and you have to apply to the FA for a license. So it'd be very interesting if Durham continue this form, continue this success, win promotion, and then need to try and fund a full-time team. So it'll be interesting one to watch with that. And they're 3 points clear, healthy goal difference, but they have played one more. So then we get into Sheffield United and Leicester City, just behind Sheffield United in second on goal difference with 11 points. Leicester City, good win for them against Palace on the weekend. Came from a goal behind to win 4-1. I thought Crystal Palace were a bit unlucky as well because they had a good chance to go 2-0 up. Chloe Morgan was very good in goal up until really Leicester equalised.
Did a great game. Kind of Leicester had a lot of chances. Floodgates. She kept it really tight.
I know you also thought that the sending off on Palace was a little bit harsh as well.
I think, I've seen him given, so I don't think it needs a big referee referendum, but. Yeah, I don't know. First challenge, I think, for that player. She just went in a bit hard. She's a striker on a defender, that part of the fit pitch. You know, I thought it was harsh red, but I thought Leicester had more quality, even though obviously they played half a game with a player extra.
So Leicester in third, big win for them. And then we have Liverpool in fourth. Liverpool didn't play at the weekend. So there's a lot of games in hand in this table, but it's really, really tight. Liverpool on 10 points, Lewis on 10 points. And then in the best of the rest, we've got sort of 6 points, Coventry and Blackburn in sixth and seventh place. So really, really tight, really exciting. And I think the storylines and the drama will keep coming in this division. So definitely keep an eye on it.
Yeah, I was really impressed watching the Leicester highlights with LaShante Paul, who I'd seen the week before on the 90 minutes against Liverpool. And I think she is ready to make the leap and step up into the WSL. And I think watching some of the quality in sides like Leicester and Sheffield United and Durham to some extent, although I haven't watched enough Durham, so I don't want to speak out of turn. I think you really start to see the food chain. I can see Claudia Walker, who's having a great season for Birmingham, maybe stepping up to a Reading or a Spurs. And then I really see LaShante Paul making that next step up to a Birmingham, Villa, West Ham. And you really start to see that kind of quality coming through.
It's also interesting. I wanted to write this down and forgot to say at the time, but Remy Allen, who's a very experienced WSL player, played at Reading, Birmingham, Lincoln. She's now playing for Leicester. So it shows that there's a desire to play in the Championship. Rachel Furness, far too good to be playing the Championship. Rinzola Babajide, more of the same. Someone who's been called up to the England side. They decided to play in the Championship this season. So it shows that they feel like it's a competitive league. They feel like it's good quality football and they believe in the clubs they're playing for. So I think that's great to be able to see the way that the pyramid is developing as women's football becomes more sustainable and professionalised.
It's still early, but do you have a prediction for who's going to get that one promotion spot from the Championship?
I think Liverpool will come good because I just think compared to everyone else, the quality of the squad they have, the budget they have, even though it's low for the WSL, is pretty good for the Championship. So I do see Liverpool coming back and winning this league, because if they can win against the Durham and Sheffield United, then I think they'll climb back up.
I'm going to back the Foxes and the brilliant LaShante Paul, who was everywhere yesterday. All right, let's skip over and take a little hop and a jump and a brief flight into NWSL Corner, wrapping up the full series, wrapping up all of 2020 in the USA leagues. Quite an incredible game on Saturday afternoon, evening in the UK, Flo. You saw some of this. Pride came back from 3-0 down at halftime against 2019 champions North Carolina Courage and got a 3-3 draw. The drama, Flo, the absolute drama.
Yeah, fantastic game. And the tide is turning, really.
Proper game.
A really important result for Orlando. And I think there's a real positive feeling around the club and a feeling like they can finally start building now, because it'd been a really difficult 6 months to a year for them. Terrible last season. Then they had the situation with not being able to go to the Challenge Cup, bunch of players leaving to play in Europe. And it felt like they were being a little bit patched together. But you've seen old names step forward, especially Sidney Leroux, who took a big gash to the head.
That was brutal, really gruesome.
I think there's a spirit that binds this team, and I think you get a sense of that when you look at their social media. When you've got characters like Ashlyn Harris, Ali Krieger, Marta, Sidney Leroux, Presley, I think there's some really strong, amazing characters and great people in that team. And I think that they're finally maybe realizing it and realizing that they can harness that and create a culture that can win them football matches. And maybe they weren't quite realizing that before.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, you talk about, you know, they were bottom of the league last year. They miss out on the Challenge Cup because of positive cases. They lose Morgan, Van Egmen, Kennedy, Zdorsky. You know, so many players leave the club. And they still, you know, two losses and two draws. They don't end up on a win. But I think you're right. I think they'll look at this and the second half performance against Houston, where they lost 2-1, is really, really encouraging. I love how Sidney Leroux kind of created the first goal for Vigiano, I love it when a goal is based on reaction time. And Vigiano is just like, it's the first one to react and just prods that ball home after Rodin's made a good save. And I think it shows a lot of character. Marta with the wonderful free kick in the 92nd minute was just so much fun to see a player like that. Probably the greatest, maybe the greatest with female player of all time, easily. Up there probably with, you know, Brazil's greatest player of all time with Pelé. Really amazing to see her still doing it, and great whip on that final ball. And yeah, I think the full series is really hard to work out what it means, but watching that game, you know what it meant to those Pride players who've had a crap time of it and really came away just so proud of what they've done. And I think we talk about the WSL and the NWSL sometimes in these relationships. And I think what's really cool about the NWSL in relationship to the WSL is because of the systems, which we can get into in another podcast, at play, there is a lot more balance quality-wise around the league. And so even a bottom-of-the-table team like the Orlando Pride, who are notoriously bad, can kind of show up, and you can kind of see these surprise draws or surprise results out a little bit more commonly than you can back in England. The big shout out to Dabina and Lynn Williams, who continue to probably be the best front duo in the league. Another couple of goals for Dabina, who was last year's MVP player of the season, and Lynn Williams, who will probably be leading the women's national team of America in the Olympics next year. The other final game was the OL Reign from Seattle beat Utah 2-0. This was a big result for OL Reign coach Farid Bensiti, who's had a bit of a tough time starting in Seattle, coming over with a lot of experience from France. I think Seattle really needed this. It's only their second win of the season in 9 games, including the Challenge Cup. Both of those wins coming over Utah, funnily enough. I think Reign have been quite plodding on the ball. I think he wants them to play a lot of possession football, and it hasn't necessarily worked a lot of the times with some of these really quick athletic teams in the NWSL. But this was a really big win over, you know, a very chaotic, mismanaged, reeling Utah Royals side, who actually I think have some great rookies and some great players, but definitely need a full gutting kind of from the chairman, owner, all the way down to the head coach. We're unsure whether or not Amy Lapielbia is going to keep the job as the caretaker manager. I think it was a huge win for Reign, who haven't had a great season. They finished second bottom of the full series table, and they were pretty poor out in Utah at the Challenge Cup. Like I said, the Royals are going to have a huge clear out, and we're not really sure if Kristen Press is going to come back there. They'll get an allocation place. Becky Sauerbrunn also moved on. We kind of think maybe they're going to try and get some international players from France, Germany, or England next spring. So yeah, it's kind of the end of a tough year for Utah, but you know, I think it'll be good news in the long run. Sofia Huerto scored the first goal for OL Reign, also announced after the game that she's going to be heading over to France to join Lyon as a squad player. So maybe keep an eye out for her. She's a long time kind of NWSL star and fringe women's national team player, who's also been out to the A-League for the last 4 years. So very used to international women's football. And that is it for the NWSL. We'll do maybe some more wider look at what's going on in the American game after a very strange 2020 season another time. But otherwise, that's your roundup for the week. Any other business, Flo? I wanted to just plug our wonderful interview with Ishi and Afia Johnson. If you didn't catch it, episode 10 of Relatively Football, catching up with some siblings. Really, really good fun. Thanks so much to everyone who's already listened to it and shared it. I like to think we brought them some good luck as they came down from 2-0 down at the weekend to get their first win of the season, 4-2 for QPR Ladies. I texted you at halftime, Flo, that I was quite worried about Steve Quasi and the QPR Ladies, but what a result that was.
Yeah, it's great to see them back to winning ways. It's been a difficult summer, I think, for a lot of people that work in the grassroots side of football, because players are having to make decisions about their careers. If you're not getting paid to play, and you need to find a way to make money, your situation may have changed financially, or the 6 months out and in lockdown, just maybe you fell out of love with the game. So I think it's been a really difficult summer for a lot of grassroots teams. So it's great to see QPR women winning again, because they had a really good season last year that was unfortunately curtailed in the end. So I'm just glad that they can get themselves up and running.
Yeah, well done, Steve, out there. And well done, you, Flo, on your wonderful article in The Guardian about the crossroads that the WSL is at in regards to the future of the league. Go check that out on The Guardian website or pick up a paper. You can follow us at Relatively Foot on Twitter, at Relatively Football on Instagram. Email us at relativelyfootball@gmail.com. Anything else, Flo? Or is that how we'll leave you?
I think that's how we'll leave you.
That's going to be how we leave you. All right. Be safe, wear a mask, and we'll see you very soon. Bye-bye.